It's time for the best coverage of the top stories in sports. The Sports Wrap with Jason Page starts now.
On a Monday, and great to have you with us. Lots to do over the next 60 minutes. A lot of football today. Got a lot of problems with you people. Bill Bender will drop by from the Sporting News in his usual Monday spot. Talk about the weekend that was in college football, and oh, do we have a lot to get to. We set aside two segments for Bill Bender. So we'll get to that. There was a huge trade in the NBA on Friday night as I was enjoying my first Las Vegas all-you-can-eat buffet. It was interrupted. We'll talk about that coming up a little later on. Some baseball to talk about as well. Baseball does something better than any sport, bar none. I want to talk about that because the baseball season still isn't over for the regular season. We'll do more on that tomorrow. But we start things out in the NFL, and Sam Yarnell is here, as he is each and every day on the program. And here's what I've learned from week four in the NFL, Sam Yarnell. It's a really mediocre league. Let's just be honest. I mean, outside of a few teams, it's a really mediocre NFL. It just is. You know, you watch these games between all the penalties, and some of it's, you know, based on the way the league is handling its business and the way games are being officiated and players are getting hurt and it can't keep guys on the field. And all of this, and all of it adds up to me, and I know it's kind of a generic take, but because I could sit here and go into example after example, it's a very mediocre football league right now. That's what it feels like to me. You know, it's got a lot of star power. It's got a lot of potential for a boom. But to me, it's just very mediocre. That's kind of where I am through the first, basically the first quarter of the season. Now, everybody's played roughly four games. I feel like it's just been a very mediocre 4 weeks for the NFL. Now, it could get better as guys sort of improve and you know, figure out schemes and get more cohesive because the preseason's a joke. That's kind of where I am through 4 weeks.
I hear you, and I definitely agree with the concept, right, that the standard deviation away from the mean in terms of talent in the NFL right now has gotten a lot smaller, especially this season. I think my argument would be that, like, the talent level has gone up while average has gotten a lot closer, and we are seeing, like, the bottom get a lot closer to the top than we have in past years. I think the average of that football has gotten a lot better while the best teams have definitely come down a little bit. We're seeing the what we would think of as the worst teams playing a lot better than we thought they would, especially coming into the season. And I don't think anyone had the 49ers at 2-2 through 4 weeks.
Well, injuries have a lot to do with that, I think, in the case of
100%. But at the end of the day, like, it's definitely a different brand of football. And I totally understand how you can reach the conclusion of mediocrity, because yes, especially compared to the fun NFL that we had for like three seasons leading into this, the pass happy West Coast offense left and right NFL, where everyone was throwing for 300 yards a game, compared to that, it's not as fun. But all around, I think that trench football has gotten a lot better this year. We're seeing the worst offensive line a lot better this year than it was last year, at least analytically. And the run game this year has obviously had this huge revitalization,
really,
Jason. And that's a huge part of, I think, what you're saying, and a huge part of why a lot of fans are upset with what the NFL's put on the field this year.
It's kind of interesting because the NFL wants more offense, right? And they've done everything they can to tailor rules towards offense. Yet every time I look around, it's defense that's winning the day here, yep, Sam. So the NFL could try as hard as it wants to push this idea of we want offense, offense, offense. But that's not what the product is showing right now. By the way, the definition of mediocre, of only moderate quality, not very good. It's not to say it's horrible. It's not to say, I know people think I say mediocre and it has a negative connotation. It's just kind of mid for me right now. That's just where I am. It's mid. It's a mid league.
Oh, man, my youth is rubbing off on you. It's great to see. I agree with you. I do. Like, at the end of the day, the talent level in the NFL has seemed to collapse in on itself. Again, not saying that it's gone Correct. Down at all. The Correct. Average is still the average. Yes. I would even, again, argue the average has gone up. But the worst teams are playing better. The better teams are playing worse. So I totally am with you on the side of mediocrity. My takeaway from these first 4 weeks, Jason, and especially week four, it is a week-to-week yeah. league in the year. NFL. 1 week, we'll be talking about, oh my gosh, if the Ravens lose this game, they're done for the season. Yeah. Right off the whole season, it's done. They're not even going to contend for the division. We wake up Monday morning woodshed taking yes. yeah. of the Buffalo Bills. And I mean, they got taken to the woodshed, folks. It was not good for the Buffalo Bills last night. And there's a huge punch in the mouth that they took in terms of their season. But the Baltimore Ravens, we wake up on Monday morning and I see Rex Ryan calling them the best team in the NFL right now. What are we doing
can
here?
Can I tell you right now, Sam, as much as I like to think Rex Ryan is crazy, he and his foot fetish, as much as I want to say Rex Ryan is crazy, you give me right now through week four, what, any team's best against the rest of the league, Baltimore's the best team in the NFL.
So I think that's an interesting thought, and I think Chris Collinsworth, as much as Chris Collinsworth is crazy, he said something of so much value to me on the broadcast last night, and that's this. Playing the Baltimore Ravens when they're at their best is the college equivalent of playing a service academy. Mm. They play an incredibly unique brand they of do. Football, which yes. you're right. When they're playing at their best, cannot be matched by anyone. And we've seen that down the road over the course of the last two seasons specifically.
Sam, they're now a matchup nightmare. They're a matchup nightmare.
And, well, they have been in the past, and now you add Derrick Henry, who at 30-something yeah. years old is still RB1 in the league, which I know fantasy owners out there think is crazy.
I said it when they got him. Sam.
This team, Jason, when they play their best football, and this is why I had them in my Super Bowl matchup preseason, when they play their best football, there's no one in the league that can compete with the Baltimore Ravens. You're right. Now, are they the best team in the league right now? Not a shot. Look at their loss against the Oakland Raiders. I'm sorry, the Las Vegas Raiders. I've got Oakland on my mind. It's my okay. fault. I do it's apologize. Okay. But the Ravens are not the best team in the league right now. We've got two-time defending Super Bowl champions still in the league.
And as much as it pains me to say, because I want to see the Chiefs three-peat, because I did predict it before the season started, Baltimore's best team in the league. When they want, but again, what I said to you was, when they are playing at their best is better than everybody sure. else's best. We'll continue the conversation. We still have a few unbeatens left. We'll rank them next. We keep the conversation moving on this Monday edition of Sports Wrap. Lots of football on the show. Bill Bender in 10 minutes from the Sporting News, their national football writer, both college and the NFL. But for the purposes of our conversation, we usually focus on the college. Get his thoughts on a wild weekend. Is Notre Dame back in the playoff picture? They're back, baby. Big win over Louisville. Also had a pretty good game between Alabama and Georgia. Pretty good. It was all right, Sam Yarnell, right? It was okay. Sam. Look at that face. If I could pinch your cheeks through the screen right now, I would do it.
Yeah, I had Georgia money line.
Oh God. Oh, as we say about my dog when he's scooting around on his surgically repaired butt. You so poor thing.
We're gonna get into it with Bill, but I got to say okay. about that football game.
Okay. Can I just say this before we get into taking stock in the league's unbeatens? This league has a problem right now, and you know what it is? It's coaches thinking they're too smart. It really is. Between the Nick Sirianni's of the world, Sean Payton yesterday did everything he could late in that game to lose it for the Denver Broncos, kicking a 50-yard field goal when his defense is shutting down Aaron Rodgers and company. And then you've got Jim Harbaugh. Well, Jim Harbaugh yesterday deciding to kick. I mean, the Chargers should win that game. kick the field goal. You got a really good chance to win that game. You kick the field goal there. And instead, he decides, you know what? I need 7 instead of 3. No, 3 would have been okay. Just saying. All right, let's take stock in the league's unbeaten, Sam. Jim Harbaugh, man, smartest guy in the room. Just ask him. Let's talk about some of the unbeatens. Minnesota continues yesterday. Boy, that game at halftime looked like a laugher. The Packers were able to make a game of it in the second half with Jordan Love getting a little more comfortable. But look, man, it's many. It's all about many in the NFC right now. And, you know, Washington is starting to make some noise, and they're not one of the unbeaten, so I'm going to keep them out of this conversation. We'll take some more time and talk about them tomorrow in Tuesday Leftovers. But Minnesota just continues to impress, both on the defensive and offensive sides of the ball.
And Jason, I talked about it last week on the show. I'm going back to it this week. Coaching, coaching, coaching. Brian Flores did an insane job in that game of doing what he's done all season, making quarterbacks confused with his defensive coverages and his defensive sets. Jordan Love, what, 2 interceptions? 3 interceptions? Definitely more than one, because the Prince of Picks was on him to throw an interception. Cha-ching. This Brian Flores defense this season has been outstanding. He has completely revitalized his coaching career. And then the KOC offense continues to be the wagon it is, no matter who is under center. It's truly so impressive what they are doing up in Minnesota, Jason. It's hard for, we'll get into ranking them later.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's not difficult. There's only a few left. So ranking it was not too difficult right now. What were you saying?
We were talking about the best team in the NFL last segment. It's hard for me not to say right now the Minnesota Vikings are not the best team in the NFL. And that's hilarious because Sam Darnold is their quarterback.
Comprehensively,
and 5 years
yes.
ago, I told you that in 5 years, Sam yes. Darnold would be the quarterback of the best team in the NFL 4 weeks into the season. You might hit me.
Comprehensively speaking, Minnesota is the best team in the league right now. Through 4 weeks, if we talk about who has played the best overall football through 4 weeks, you take Minnesota, you put them at the top of the list. I don't disagree with that. And again, you know, we got Kansas City on the screen right now, who when they needed to put a drive together yesterday, yet again, they showed they can flip the switch, even without Rashee Rice. And that's a whole nother topic now, because there's a very good chance they're going to be without him for the rest of the season. I don't know if it's been made official yet. Maybe by the time this airs in most of the country, it will be official that he's probably going to be lost to a torn ACL. And on a weird play, which we could probably spend the next 3 minutes talking about, but we're not going to, where Patrick Mahomes goes in low and winds up taking out his own guy. It's a questionable play by Mahomes after he throws a terrible interception, by the way, on top of everything. Patrick Mahomes isn't playing good football right now. He's playing very, again, mid. But at the end of the day, they're still 4-0, which is just remarkable when you consider they have not played an easy schedule, Sam. And they're still 4-0, despite the fact that, you know, arguably the best quarterback on the planet, Patrick Mahomes, is not playing anywhere near the level he's capable of playing.
You're right. I think the funniest thing about all this to me is the MVP award market has exposed itself for the joke that it is over the course of last night. Patrick Mahomes is currently the favorite to win MVP, and his interception rate, I believe it was going into the weekend, and he threw one over the weekend, so I don't understand how it could have gotten better. His interception rate's the worst it's been of his entire career. This is a joke. What are we talking about? This guy is not playing like a top 5 quarterback right now, let alone the best player in the league. What are we doing here, folks? Not to say that Patrick Mahomes isn't great. He'll go down as a top 2 quarterback of all time. But right now, he's playing terribly.
I agree. Not playing. He's not playing good football. It's just
really quick.
Yeah.
I got to fit this in back on the Vikings because this stat is so impressive to me. They're scoring at the pace of the Buffalo Bills, who lead the NFL in scoring right now. They've scored 6 less points through 3 games. They're defending at the pace of the Pittsburgh Steelers. They've allowed 9 more points than the Pittsburgh Steelers have through 4 games. The stuff the Minnesota Vikings are doing playing all around football is truly impressive to watch. I really want to bet on them to make a deep run in these playoffs.
I hate to ask this, though. Is there a point where you just start to think Sam Darnold's going to show up? That the real, like, that, would the real Sam Darnold, yeah, would the real Sam Darnold please stand up? I don't know. Like I said, I'm not wishing it on them. Maybe we'll get my buddy Paul Allen on the show, who calls the Vikings.
If there was a spot for him not to show up, it would have been week two or week three. And honestly, this is going to sound so silly for a quarterback, but getting past week two and week three may have been the biggest hurdle for him. And those wins against the Niners and Texans that he led his team to may be his most impressive wins all season.
Seattle and Detroit, two Monday Night Football games tonight. Seattle and Detroit is one of them. Tennessee and Miami is the other. We'll talk about those a little later on in the show because there is another unbeaten in there. Steelers fell yesterday from the ranks of the unbeaten. We didn't even get to them because our time management was so terrible. Bill Bender will join us coming up in a couple of minutes. Our friend from the Sporting News. We'll talk some college football with him after a wild weekend around the game. Don't go anywhere. Lots more to do. All right, we did some NFL. We'll have a little more at the end of the show in odds and ends. The Monday Night Football doubleheader, but it's time on Mondays, as we do at this time, to talk some college football. That means we bring in our friend Bill Bender from the Sporting News, who does a terrific job on the college gridiron, hangs out with us on the program. I heard there were a couple of good football games this weekend, Bill.
Yeah, you were texting me Saturday night, and that Alabama-Georgia game was as good as advertised. As I wrote for us, it felt like that was the best Sunday night football matchup you get in the NFL. The way it went back and forth, the drama, the fact that we thought it was over at halftime and we're crowning Jalen Milroe the Heisman, then we were getting ready to call it the worst collapse in Bryant Denny history. And who stands out? A 17-year-old kid makes the unbelievable play that determines the game.
And how about the fact that right coming out of the halftime, Chris Fowler's sitting there going, "Wow, the latest Heisman voting is, and it's Milroe and blah 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 blah." And I'm just like, "Oh God, he just put the death nail. He just put the curse on it." But they figure out a way, obviously, to rally late and get the win. What was your big takeaway from seeing those two meet up? I mean, I know one's going to go up in the standings and in the rankings and one goes down, but at the end of the day, you're talking a 1A and 1B. If they play 10 times, they're probably going to split it, aren't they?
There's probably more concern for Georgia because their running game isn't working out right now. And when they can't run the ball, you see Carson Beck make a few first half mistakes. He played a really great second half, though, to get them back in the game the way he was throwing it around, the big throws that he made. Their defense is going to give up points when they play elite offenses. That's how the college football game is. So, whereas with Alabama, yeah, the defense gave up some plays in the second half, but their offense with Milroe, Williams, and those two running backs, including Jam Miller, Justice Haynes, they're going to be able to control the tempo in every game they play as long as they continue to score points like that. I think they are a shoe-in. I don't know. Jason, you tell me. I mean, we put them ahead of Texas, and that was what I was really thinking about after the game. I don't know which one of those teams is better. They're both really good.
You know what the bottom line is to me? They're probably all going to be in the playoff.
Right.
So well, who cares? I know it winds up dictating who plays against who based on where they wind up being at the end of the year, but they're all going to wind up in the playoffs.
But and the SEC wins in this segment. They
absolutely.
They get to do this again in a couple weeks. Yeah. When on October 19th, Texas plays Georgia at Texas. Tennessee plays Alabama at Tennessee.
Wow.
I mean, they don't even have to like run a commercial that day. They just say turn on SEC football for 8 hours because that's what we're going to do. Yeah. And I think that's a disadvantage for Ohio State, who might be the most complete team in the country, but they don't have the benefit of playing in these huge showdowns where when we watch it, we're like, I don't know if you guys did it. Like I said, I was like, yeah, Alabama's number one. They have they've taken the biggest hand for those of us who play a little bit of cards.
Bill, I think one of the biggest questions for me headed into this Georgia-Alabama matchup was how would the trench warfare play out between the big bodies of Georgia and those of Alabama, both lines going head-to-head. What did you kind of take away from the Georgia defensive line against the Alabama offensive line and vice versa?
I mean, Alabama controlled that side of it, especially in the first half. They were able to get whatever they wanted in the running game, and Jalen Milroe was able to make some plays. And, you know, one thing Fowler did say that stood out to me was, you know, Jalen Milroe was running by SEC guys. He wasn't running by a two-star kid that plays at, like, UL Monroe, with all due respect to them. He was making plays against an elite defense that came into that game not allowing a touchdown. And then on the other side, I think Georgia was impacted by Tate Ratledge's injury. Obviously, really good All-American caliber guard. They had an injury at center during the game. So that probably impacted the running game a little bit, but it just, they can't lean on that like they used to be able to do. And that's probably something that could catch up with them when they play Texas, when they play Tennessee.
Now, for Ryan Williams, it seems obviously is the story of the game, the true freshman, over 100 yards, a huge touchdown that wins them the game. What is his ceiling? Because if he's making these plays and having this big of a game against Georgia in his freshman year, what is the ceiling for this kid, Bill?
Well, I mean, you know, the usual first-round pick. You know, how many Alabama receivers have we seen do that? And you see them playing on Sunday. You know, when you turn on a TV, I challenge you guys to find an Ohio State or an Alabama game or an NFL game without an Ohio State or an Alabama receiver on the field. And it's crazy that one of the things from yesterday or Saturday was you can make an argument that the two most impactful players right now are Ryan Williams at Alabama and Jeremiah Smith at Ohio State. And they're freshmen, and they're incredible. I mean, Jeremiah Smith is like watching Terrell Owens now. It's unbelievable what he's been able to do up there, and it makes it that much more exciting that you have these freshman playmakers on national championship contenders.
We mentioned Ohio State a couple of times in this segment, so I just got to slip it in because we talked about them last week on this show, and you predicted it, Bill. They come out and they rout Michigan State. Have all the doubts been cast aside, if there were any, about Ohio State? Are they, you know, a clear-cut top three national title contender right now?
Yeah, they're right there with those teams. Like I said, I mean, top five in scoring offense, top five in scoring defense. Play Iowa this week. I'll be going to that game on Saturday. I do want to see how they stack up against a real defense. And with all due respect to Michigan State, Iowa's better defense, have a running game. They can run the clock a little bit with Caleb Johnson. They've had a bye week to prepare. And, you know, we'll see if they can run with the Buckeyes at least for a half. But I do think they're complete. Like Tennessee, like Texas, like Alabama, like Georgia. It's a solid. I don't have any problem with the top five at all. It's once you get outside the top five that I'm like, yeah, this team's good, but, and you could go from Miami to LSU and probably pass that and find something wrong.
I only got about 30 seconds here in this segment, Bill. We're going to hold you over for one more, but is there almost a race now in over the next 4 or 5 weeks to kind of build your resume as much as you can for that first college football playoff ranking, because where it starts is oftentimes so important to where it winds up at the end of the season?
Correct. Yes. And these next couple of weeks will be interesting. This weekend's kind of a dog in terms of you don't have any matchups with ranked teams. Doesn't mean there's not intrigue. You're going to get Missouri and Texas A&M. You're going to get Michigan at Washington. Those are two top 10 teams that are underdogs on the road this weekend. So against teams that aren't ranked. So there's always room for a little bit. And it does set up, to your point, October 12th, October 19th. All you have to do is look at the schedule. They're loaded.
All right. We got a few things we want to get to with you in the next segment, including this whole UNLV debacle that I wrote a column about for MSNBC. Over the weekend. Bill Bender hanging out with us. I know, Bill. I'm stealing your money. We're coming back. Don't go anywhere. All right, we're halfway home on this Monday edition of Sports Wrap. Something to consider coming up in about 10 minutes. Baseball does it better than anybody else. What am I talking about? That's coming up. Bill Bender is hanging out with us. Sporting news. We kept them for another segment because there is so much to talk about. All right, Bill. Miami and Virginia. Sam and I both saw it. What'd you think, Sam?
Oh, tough for a preseason Virginia Tech better like myself and those of us who backed Kyren Drones to win the Heisman, because that could have been a Heisman play, but it was a debacle.
I thought he caught it, but, you know, it was one of those that, and when you overturn it like they did, you leave yourself open to conspiracy theories. Oh, they just wanted Miami to win. You know, to me, yes, Virginia Tech lost. The bigger takeaway for me is Miami showed some serious red flags. The missed tackles, the turnovers. Cam Ward's phenomenal. And yes, he can make some great plays down the field with his arm, and they're going to score points. But if they tackle like they did in that game and bump into any of those SEC teams we talked about in the first segment, it won't take long. It won't be pretty.
Well, let's be honest. Tackling's a lost art up and down in football these days. Nobody knows how to tackle.
So, but I wanted the justification that the ACC came out with was a little weird, right? They said that the play was blown dead because the Miami player was out of bounds and touched the ball. But if the Miami player was out of bounds and touched the ball, isn't that illegal touching? I was confused by that whole thing. I thought if you call it a touchdown on the field, you just can't overturn it. If you don't think it's a touchdown, or you don't want it to be a touchdown, as the conspiracy theorist said, don't call it a touchdown on the field. It's as simple as that. I don't know. It is something, Bill, that I think that we're going to talk about for the rest of the college football season.
Yeah, it's a huge game and a huge thing that happened there in the overturned replay. I mean, it doesn't happen often. I could go both ways on the actual call. Like if one time I would watch it and say, oh, he definitely caught that. The other one, you kind of, I don't know. And, you know, it depended on who you read the tweet from, except who you read the tweet from.
Yeah.
Yeah. Essentially. Sure. Existentially. thanks for the save. you know, you could change your opinion.
You know, ultimately though, overturning the call on the field is what I have the issue with. Because if you don't have irrefutable or indisputable evidence, I don't know how you're overturning it in that spot. All right, I got to ask you about Notre Dame and Louisville. You know, when Notre Dame lost a few weeks ago, and what was it, Central Illinois or whatever it was, Eastern Illinois, everybody was like, oh, that's it for Notre Dame. All of a sudden, it feels like they've played themselves back into a situation where they kind of control their own destiny, Bill.
Well, this is how this 12-team playoff works a little bit. You look at the rankings now, and you're like, wait, LSU, they're right in the picture. They lost the opener. Notre Dame, week two loss. Hey, they're right there. And that was a big win for them because it was probably they maybe have one or two more ranked teams on the schedule. Louisville turned the ball over. Louisville had a lot of missed opportunities in that game, but Riley Leonard's starting to grow a little bit as a passer. Notre Dame has a good defense. That defense will keep them in every game. They create turnovers. They have a great secondary. They're starting to run the football a little bit better too. So I think as long as they keep winning, and if you're a Notre Dame guy, you want USC to keep winning, sets up a nice season-ending showdown at the end of the road. But they're right there. I mean, Michigan's ranked top 10 in the country with a pass offense that ranks 129th and is borderline embarrassing, but they're winning with running and defense. And you kind of look at it, you're like, oh, I mean, for now, yeah.
Bill, UNLV, the entire debacle of last week, which happened right after we had you on, of course, so I wasn't going to call you up and make you come on again, but you know, Sluka leaves, then you got a running back leaving for maybe different reasons, but Sluka leaving, the whole NIL problem. I wrote a column about it for MSNBC. Everybody's talking about it as a potential tipping point in this lack of governance over NIL. Is it that tipping point?
Hopefully on some level. I just hate seeing, I can't. Maybe it's somebody that played in high school a little bit and has a kid that plays junior high football. I can't get off the piece of you left your team up 3-0 with a 3-0 record. And your replacement just came in and balled out, and they beat Fresno State really badly. Have a great Friday night spotlight coming up against Syracuse. But I understand the other end of it. Okay, you weren't given the money you were promised. Get it in writing. We need to have more guardrails on these NIL situations. I do hate it for Sluka because – probably not going to get a chance at the NFL. Maybe he wasn't going to get one anyway, but his name will always be attached to this, much like Jaden Rashada is attached to the thing that happened at Florida. So I do think we need guardrails to protect the athletes. But what does that mean? Everybody says guardrails. We need guardrails. Well, I think we need contracts. We need actual contracts when they do these things. And then if you want to do a separate, you know, like car endorsement on the side, well, that's on you, but that's not through the school.
Yeah. Haj Malik Williams, by the way, 300 yards of total offense, 4 total touchdowns, didn't throw a pick. I think it's safe to say that UNLV team has rallied around the Campbell transfer and is ready to continue their winning ways, even without Matthew Sluka. Bill, what is kind of the takeaway from all of this? Because not only do you have the Sluka part with the NIL and obviously what we just talked about, but the Haj Malik Williams thing, here's a guy who transferred in from a mid-major and came in and fit that offense incredibly. Does that add another narrative to this?
Well, I think so, because they are, at least in our rankings, the highest-ranked Group of Five team. They're undefeated. Right now they're on track literally to make the college football playoff. Now, do I think they're going to beat Boise State? Probably not. I think they could get beat by Syracuse on Friday night. Kyle McCord is the leader in the FBS in passing yards. So, but I think the fact that we've spent this much airtime talking about UNLV shows how far the NIL conversation will reach, and anybody will look for any reason to have it.
Bill Bender, always appreciate it, my friend. All right, odds and ends wraps it up in 10 minutes. How do we do in Page versus the Prince this week? I'll give you a clue. I did best! our run of mediocrity has come to an end. Sam Yarnell. At least for one of us it has. But let's talk something to consider today on the show. And I was thinking about
weekend. Hold on, really quick. Surely after a reaction like that, you must have a better record on the season, right?
I'm just a game behind now. That's it. Just a game behind. Knock it on the door. You hear me. You hear those footsteps. Let's talk some baseball. Because and look, I'm not going to go crazy talking about the wild card and who's playing who and all of that. And the reason is simple. We still don't know as of the time of the taping of this show because of the fact that Major League Baseball royally screwed up last week when they saw a hurricane bearing down on the Southeast. They didn't move the Mets and the Braves. So now you've got a doubleheader being played on the day after the final day of the regular season that's going to decide whether the Braves, Mets, or Diamondbacks make the postseason as wild cards. So we'll wait and let that play out. We'll talk about it on Tuesday's show, get into all the matchups because the wild card matchups do start up on Tuesday. Sam, something I was thinking about over the weekend, though. Major League Baseball does these special magical moments. Major League Baseball, to me, makes me feel more than any other sport. Whether it was the way the whole, as bad as the A's thing was last week and is hard and made me cry and all that stuff, even that, in that dilapidated, old, busted-up ballpark, it was still a beautiful thing to watch. All those fans there, the streamers coming down, players giving dirt to fans from the infield, all of that stuff. Take that one, put it aside. Kyle Hendricks, his final start as a Cub, what he means to that franchise for obvious reasons, gets a standing ovation. His friend comes out and takes him out of the game. You know, we had that moment, which was beautiful, with Kyle Hendricks. Then you had Charlie Blackman announcing his retirement late last week. And then the Rockies allowing him to run out onto the field by himself to start that game. Then he gets a base hit. They pull him out of the game. Another beautiful moment. Just baseball has a knack for doing these things better than any other sport. And there's no one way that they do them. There's no cookie cutter way that these things happen. A lot of times they happen organically, and these were just a few examples. Not to mention the Tigers, you know, winning the wild card spot after being a 0.2% favorite to even get in 6 weeks ago as a wild card team. Baseball just does it best with these things.
You're exactly right. It's the nature of the game. I think that, you know, when we talk about baseball, it naturally is the most poetic sport. The Blackman thing was the one that I follow the most closely and the most emotional for me. Obviously, that guy's been a staple of a really bad team for a really long time. And a guy who, like, if he wins at all in his career, and maybe even without the winning, it just feels like for what he did for the game and what he did for the National League outfield for so many years, he deserves to be in the Hall of Fame. And I haven't looked into the numbers at all to back that up, but it just feels like that guy played for so long that he has enough counting stats to get there. I could be completely off on that. But that is kind of who Charlie Blackman was, right? He was just a natural born killer, and maybe the most under the radar, really good player of his era. Through, like I said, some really tough years in Colorado. The Detroit thing, obviously ending that tough, tough playoff drought for them is very good. The thing is, that team is so unique because they're really good, but at the same time, they had really down points throughout this season up until very late. And also, they're incredibly young. They've got the Cy Young winner, who I think they have under club control for another 4 years. This is a very promising young team. But emotionally, Jason, you're right. It's great to see what they've done for the city of Detroit and that entire area.
They played 50. It's just amazing to me. They played 50 good games, and they wind up making the playoffs. They played a 50-game stretch where they played really well.
Oh, sure.
And to me, that's just nuts. Can we talk about the trade in the NBA? Because it disrupted my all-you-can-eat buffet at the Palms on Friday night.
Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah, it was all right. Not bad. The crab legs were a little skimpy. But anyway, Karl Anthony Towns to the Knicks. Julius Randle and Dante DiVincenzo, along with a first-round pick, to the Minnesota T-Wolves. I'm going to tell you right now, and we'll get Kurt on later in the week to break this deal down a bit. I don't like the deal for the Knicks. Karl Anthony Towns does not fit New York. He is not a fit for New York. Dante DiVincenzo is a glue guy. I don't care if they want to ship off Randle to Mars. That one doesn't matter to me. Bringing in Karl Anthony Towns is problematic to me. He does not spell toughness to me. And when I think of New York and the attitude and personality of this team, to me, he does not fit.
Yeah, I hear you. Listen, I'm not full disclosure. Not here for I'm it. Not in basketball mode yet. I will say this. It's going to be very interesting to see someone with Karl Anthony Towns' injury history in that rotation. And also, I'm with you on the DiVincenzo. He was a glue guy. The Nova Knicks are done.
Yep, Nova Knicks are done. And there's talk that the Knicks will be looking to send Mitchell Robinson elsewhere as well. So something else to keep an eye on in the days ahead. He's recovering from injury. Yeah, we don't have time. It's all right. Odds and ends are right around the corner, though. We have time for that next. All right, just about time to put the wraps on this baby. But before we do, don't forget to check out Sports Wrap with Jason Page podcast. It's available on all your favorite podcasting platforms, including Spotify, Google Play, Apple Podcasts, TuneIn, iHeartRadio. I guess it's on Odyssey, somebody told me. I guess you can find it there, too. Amazon, anywhere you get your podcasts. How's that? Without any further delay, Sam, you are now time for some odds and ends. Odds and ends, Sam Yarnell, WNBA. Semifinals. I can't even call them conference semifinals. WNBA's semifinals get underway in a big way. Sabrina Ionescu, Brianna Stewart go off. The Liberty take game one in Brooklyn against the Aces in that best of five semifinal series. I mean, I got to be honest. The Aces have not played consistent basketball all year, which is why you have this as a conference semifinal matchup as opposed to a WNBA final, which it could have very easily been. But I'd actually be surprised if the Liberty didn't win this series. I think they're playing really good basketball coming in to the playoffs. Connecticut Sun, by the way, win game one in Minnesota. How about that? 73-70. Alyssa Thomas, man.
Yeah, Alyssa Thomas playing the hero, winning that game for her team, and also 19, 10, and 9. An assist shy of a triple double. I mean, come on, outstanding stuff from the Connecticut Sun. And honestly, my big takeaway was the WNBA has put on an incredible product, and I know that I rip them for playing on an NFL Sunday. And oh my gosh, yeah, why? These games are so good. Have them Monday night when two garbage NFL games are going on that nobody cares about. My goodness, this was incredible basketball yesterday. And yeah, Stewie going for basically 35 and 10, 34 and 9. What was really fun to watch. Awesome. Aces are on the ropes.
Kelsey Plum, watch who you're talking junk to. That's Spike Lee sitting in the front row. Show some respect. Ross Chastain.
That was funny to watch. That was very funny to watch.
It was. Ross Chastain. I did not have that on my scorecard. Ross Chastain, your winner in Kansas yesterday. The playoff race there. So we gave NASCAR its obligatory 5 to 10 seconds on a Monday where there's NFL and a whole bunch of other stuff to talk about. And speaking of the NFL to talk about, Paige versus the Prince. How'd it go? Paige versus the Prince? Well, it went well for me. I went 3-1. Sam Yarnell went 2-2 for the second straight week. But we're starting to put it together, Sam Yarnell. Starting to put it together. The only game we got wrong was the Steelers -1.5 against the Colts. We gave you the Ravens -2.5. Cha-ching! We gave you the Vikings +3. Cha-ching! We gave you the Raiders -1.5. Cha-ching! Hope you tailed.
Jets were in a tough spot. That's all I'll say. The Jets were in a tough spot. We knew the Jets were going to be in a tough spot. I was telling Jason in the break, horrible beat for those of you that tailed the under in the Niners-Patriots game because Gerard Mayo kicks a field goal to make a two-possession game with 8 minutes to go in the game, a 54-yarder.
Yep.
Made no sense to me. Whatever.
Give me.
But hey, we are credit to us, Jason. We're both over 500 now on the season. That's pretty impressive for picking the NFL.
Two over 500, and I'll take that. Sam is 4 over 500 through the first 4 weeks, and we only get better as the season goes along. At least we like to think so. Titans and Dolphins, two Monday Night Football games tonight. That will be the one that starts first. Dolphins -2.5, -144 on the money line. 37.5 the total, Sam. That might be one of the lowest this year. Seahawks Lions is the second game with the Lions -4.5 at home in Detroit. Every time these two teams get together, we get bangers. Lions -210, 46.5 is the total.
This is ugly. I think I like the over in the Titans-Dolphins game.
Me too. I'm with you.
I just think that we get some points in that game.
Yeah.
My best bets, though, in both of these games, three of the same prop. Levis, Huntley, and Geno Smith all to throw an interception. I think that Snoop Huntley gets the start. Obviously, Skylar Thompson, questionable. They've been kind of in the dark about who's going to be their starter, which you can do when you have a Monday night game, whatever. Snoop Huntley will throw a pick. It's his first game in a new team. Will Levis is not good, so he'll throw a pick too. Geno Smith, he's thrown a pick every week of the season, I think. At least he's averaging one a week, so he's throwing three in three games.
Okay. I'm going to take the Dolphins -2.5 tonight. I will go with you on the over 37.5. Detroit's been kind of up and down, and everybody keeps sleeping on the Seahawks, and we had Jim Mueller on the show last week. The thing about the Seahawks is too many third and longs, too many penalties. I think that comes back to bite them on the road. I'll take the Lions -4.5. I'm not touching the total.
I forgot about this. Jared Goff is an indoor cat. We'll go alt Jared Goff, 275 plus yards. And who's he going to throw the ball to? Amon-Ra St. Brown. Bad week last week. The way he's been doing it is bad week, good week. So that means good week this week. Amon-Ra, 100 yards and a touchdown too. Add him to my card.
There you go. That's odds and ends. Sam, enjoy the Monday Night Football doubleheader. Mets Braves, we'll have a recap of that on Tuesday's show, all the playoff baseball stuff as well. Thank you, Bill Bender. Thanks to you for watching. We'll see you all back here on Tuesday. Mm-hmm.